It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HRs, recruiters, and one actor, as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. And today, Jeremy, we're going to continue our discussion about job evaluations. And we're going to talk, I think, specifically today about the feedback effect, fulfilling the purpose of performance reviews. Maybe we should, once again, just a little briefly go over what's the purpose of a performance review.
It should be, I mean, really this organic, constant flow of feedback. I just posted the references that we're going to use today. And I'm going to start off because that's a good question you ask. I actually have it highlighted. I noticed you guys were talking about everyone's wearing pink today. I actually highlighted it in pink, this very thought. When you think about it, and this is after I was doing all the research and compiling everything for these articles, the bottom line is this. For managers and employees to get comfortable with the feedback loop, that's it. So having these feedback loop sessions where employees and managers can give feedback to each other on a regular basis, it makes the process less painful, more inviting, and more effective, especially more so than the once in a while formal feedback sessions. And we talked about kind of return on time investment during the last conversation. And how much goes wrong? And it's like the BP oil spill. It's better to put the time in up front rather than have all these different things that go wrong that include, you know, miscommunications, poor quality, low morale, gossip, all these different things. We have a communication pledge up on the CBOC website under the, I think it's under the resources tab, that can be used for something like this for a manager and an employee to work together. And it can be altered. It's just a framework. But that way it could be altered to specific feedback and tailored, because it's tailored to understand the nuances, the awkwardnesses, the different synergies that two people have together. That can be tailored for feedback given to understand how do you best receive feedback? What are you likely to do with it? How should I best deliver it? How likely are you to act on it? And you can create it and you can change it to make it work. I was going to dive in. I'll turn it back to you, Tom, but I do have a couple preliminary things that I can share to kick us off based on some of these articles. But back to you for your thoughts.
Well, yeah, before we get there, because you said give feedback to each other. And my experience is feedback is a one-way street. You know, it comes from your supervisor, your manager, and you are meant to sit there and take it. There's not a lot of, oh, yeah, well, let me tell you. You know, I would love to see the situation grow where it is a two-way conversation, but my experience is that's not really the way it goes. So any advice on how to generate that?
It's funny you should say, just so everyone knows, Tom and I don't get together and prepare for these, but you perfectly hit on the first thing that I was going to hit on, which was the interpersonal effects in the three sources of feedback, which are downward, upward, and peer. And that's what you're talking about. You're talking about that upward feedback. And also when we look at peer-to-peer feedback, and there's certain situations for that as well. So first off, when you look at, it's not a one-way street. Managers should be helping employees gain the habit of feedback-seeking behavior. So these are some of the results from one of the resources today that are in the show notes. If you're listening to the podcast, it's called Effectiveness of Performance Appraisal, an Integrated Framework. And the whole idea is for employees to seek feedback on different performance gaps But the important thing is this study looked at all rate reaction, rater satisfaction, and it looks at really the entire process in terms of the perspective of the person giving the feedback and the person receiving the feedback. And Tom, it's probably been a couple of years since we talked about followership, because all the research on leadership, but there's also this, you know, followership. But when just thinking about that, we have to keep in mind the different perspectives. Managers, I don't know if they like feedback or not. I think they seek feedback. I've had bosses in the past that annoyingly are asking for feedback to the point where it made them seem insecure. So I think, the reason I say that is not to prevent people from asking for feedback as a leader, as a manager, but I say that because that I'm thinking is likely one of the reasons why they don't ask for feedback so much, because they might be insecure. So the message to the managers might be, are you really insecure? Probably not. Dig deeper into the psychological, what's going on there. And we go back to the paradox of power that we talk about all the time, that from Kuznets and Posner, in order to become powerful, you have to give power away. So I think it's one of these, it could often be one of these fake insecurities, kind of like fake fears, where when you really dive down and look at certain things that we might be fearful of, are we really afraid of it? Or is it just this topical, we thought about it briefly and we assume we should be afraid, so we are? It's almost like, are we really insecure with the feedback that we might get? In a lot of situations, I think people, if they sit and think about it for just 5 to 10 minutes, you might think, I'm really not. I would love feedback from my employees. I'm not afraid to ask. And when you look at studies on charisma and all these kinds of things, people who ask for feedback, people who are able to kind of, you know, make jokes about themselves, those are the people that are seen as most charismatic. And again, I go back to psychology as a science. Psychology, a lot of things with psychology that we look at are common sense, but a lot are not common sense. And a lot of things are actually the opposite of what you might think of common sense. And I go back to, what was that? Here, Tom, by the way, I'm going off on a tangent here, but remember that Paula Abdul song, Opposites Attract?
Mm-hmm.
People think opposites attract, that's common sense. There's so much science, psychology, that's just not the case. It's people who are similar are attracted to each other. But so that's why we get into very interesting things. We're going at it, Tom. I'll turn it back to you.
All right. Well, I think we should get to some of the other people on the panel.
Oh, there are lots of hands up. Again, I looked to my screen left here and wow. Okay.
All right. Let's start with you, Lee. Let's go over to you.
Well, I just want to come out of the gate, Tom, and say your supervisors were wrong. Okay. That's all I got. No, I'm kidding. And of course, my opinion, you know, and you can add $7 and get Starbucks with that. But what it is, there's so much to unpack. Wow. You know, trust and communication and managing expectations are so crucial for, you know, good leadership, teamwork, and all this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, feedback has got to be, it's got to be a loop, you know, the feedback loop. I mean, it's a real thing. And if you really want to have an effective team, you know, they have to understand that they can come to you and that they're expected, that there is an expectation to provide some feedback, and that there's the psychological safety and the trust that they can do that, you know. And by the same token, you got to have, you know, and there's some strength of character there as well, because, I mean, nobody likes to give, well, I won't say nobody. Most people don't like to give negative feedback. You know, there are some who cherish it, but we're not talking about them. And so to be able to go to someone and say, you know, hey, look, you know, you could have handled that better. Let's talk about that. What can we do? And it is uncomfortable, but, you know, it's kind of a rip the Band-Aid off kind of thing, because you get it over with. I mean, most people don't like conflict, but the reality is if you get it done and get it out, as uncomfortable as it is, you can resolve the conflict quickly, as opposed to making it last for, you know, long periods of time, causing, you know, toxic cultures and, you know, all the other, you know, issues with teams and psychology and all that kind of stuff. So if you have that relationship with the people, and you have those conversations, and you have the, you know, and you honestly say, you know, how are things going, you know, and you really listen to the answer, and you can show them that you're listening to the answer. And what can we do better? You know, me as a person, me as the leader, us as a team, what can we do better? And if you can actually, you know, the first few times it'll be uncomfortable without a doubt, because people are like, oh God, I'm going to say something and I'm going to get fired. And I mean, Lord knows I've felt like that before. But when you take that on and you don't get upset about it and you thank them for the feedback, and then you actually show some form of action resulting from that, and people are like, wow, they actually listened. Holy cow, they actually care. And, you know, that alone can make a huge difference in the culture and the attitude of your team. And especially if they're coming out of a toxic situation from like a previous supervisor. And it's tough at that point, really tough, because not only are you the new guy, but you're also trying, you're paying for the sins of your predecessors, and you have to work through that. But it's worth, you know, I'm here to tell you from experience, it is worth the work. It is worth the time. It is worth the discomfort, because in the end, it's better for everyone. And I'm going to stop there because I can keep going.
Yeah, don't pull Jeremy. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
So I think I might have a little bit of a different perspective on what we're looking at in the way of feedback. And so for me, one of the purposes of a performance review is for both the reviewer and the reviewee to agree on expectations going forward, right? To come to some kind of agreement on that. It's not showing up into that review and just expecting the reviewer to tell you what he or she wants you to do for the next 3 months, a year, whatever that is, right? So there needs to be this mutual process of identifying what progress you want to make as an employee and what the organization needs you to do to achieve the goals of the organization. So I think there needs to be some mutual agreement that you both are getting your needs met in that process. The other thing too is that the feedback and those expectations really need to be termed in an actionable manner, so that the employee leaves that review very clear about what they are expected to do, perform, how they're expected to pay, whatever that expectation is. It needs to be in an actionable term. And if you think about it as a time when you can really have a conversation about how you can serve each other, right? Because it is a mutual relationship if it's done well. And if, rather than just saying, well, do you have any feedback from me? It's how can I best serve you, right? Whether it's the employee or the reviewer, what X would be helpful to you moving forward. So it's not just, well, tell me what I'm doing wrong or what's the best feedback, but how can we really serve each other and do that in a productive way? And it's designed to achieve something specific, right? This is a time when you can all agree on moving forward towards the purpose or the strategic goals and things like that. And it's not all incumbent on the reviewer. As the employee, you have a responsibility to yourself for your own success, for making sure that you get what you need out of that review and are an equal participant in that and not a victim in it.
I would like that. So this might be paraphrasing a little bit, but are you saying that when we have those conversations, the supervisor should be, you know, not only here some actionable items that we, you know, I would like you to take a look at, I'd like you to move in this direction, but also here's how I'm going to play a role as your supervisor to help you get there.
Exactly. And what needs to happen is when, like on the reviews I typically have people use, there's a section for what the supervisor is going to do to help you succeed in the identified goals, right? And then that actually needs to move to that supervisor's performance review, because those are expectations they need to fill now.
I like that. All right, we'll start that tomorrow. Thank you very much, Linda. And Shauna, welcome to WorkCookie. Let's go to you. You might want to unmute yourself.
Yes, that would. good morning, everyone. I think Linda Ann mentioned like expectations, which I think expectancy theory is a great kind of framework to work from, where employees are putting forth the effort when they see that there's success and kind of like information coming back to them. And then going along with what Jeremy was saying, as far as creating the loop and supervisors asking for feedback, I think a lot of what kind of falls on the supervisor's responsibilities here is also behavior modeling. Like, if you want your employees to give you feedback, you need to be asking for feedback. That kind of creates that space of trust and rapport and building that kind of relationship, so that it can become a circle. It can become a cycle of that feedback. I think I alluded to in the last week's meeting that I had done a upward feedback talent and development with a group at University of Maryland. And one of the things that we kind of framed upward feedback is kind of like a campfire, right? When we're sitting around a campfire, we're all warm and cozy. We're comfortable. We've let our guards down. And it's kind of like a safe space for everyone to share information, right? Everyone's welcomed around a campfire. So that's kind of the framework I like to kind of build on when it comes to giving feedback and like accepting feedback, is that campfire kind of model, making sure that it's a place and a time where people can be relaxed. So maybe that's not at fiscal close when the managers are probably under some stress for tight deadlines and things like that. But making sure it's the right timing. And I'll also drop a couple of the articles I found when doing that as well in the chat.
Let me ask you, though, when you're working with those people, how resistant are some of those managers and supervisors to actually receive feedback?
That's a great question. I actually found an article just a couple seconds ago that listed almost 50% or 40% of companies are now using 360-degree feedback performance reviews. So I think it's on the rise. And then I have another statistic where 50% of supervisors were actually welcome to the reciprocal feedback in their performance evaluation because it helped them get better.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I wish those numbers were higher. Nick, let's go to you.
It's funny, you know, like I said last week, we see all these headlines of, is the performance review dead? And I would say that the way that it's structured now, it should go away because it's an event that creates, you know, anxiety, stress, it checks a box, and it's all the things that the research is going to say are wrong. It's not a safe spot. It's not it's not a genuine conversation, and it's not actionable. You know, usually it's, oh, remember in January, you did this thing, and we're sitting in December going, I had a bad day. Like, I don't remember all the circumstances that were going on. So, I mean, we talk about creating the psychological safety. You know, it's a mentality shift to want to continuously improve. That assumes that both the manager and the managee want to improve and get better at that. And I think we always assume that positive intent. But I know there's resistance to that. You know, I'm doing good enough. Leave me alone. You know, it can be a common sentiment. But yeah, to put all these in place, you do have to have a paradigm shift about what the performance review is. Is it about protecting the company and their investment and checking all these boxes? Or is it about genuinely investing in your people? And I think that shift is coming. I think there's more and more organizations that are seeing that when you take care of your people, the long game of productivity goes up. There's less turnover. There's all these positive impacts. But it does come with that modeling of, you know, this is a way we can demonstrate that we care about you. And nobody wants to get into a fight about it. And I think sometimes these can be somewhat contentious. You know, don't tell me I'm not doing my job. Let me tell you what you're doing wrong. And there's that reactive kind of, I'm going to protect myself, that can happen. But if it is more regular, more structured, more, you know, investment in the person, then, you know, we can see that it's not just a pinpoint in time where, hey, you screwed up and I'm going to tell you about it, and that's all I'm ever going to think about from here forward. But hey, remember that time you made a mistake and you corrected it? I'm really proud of you for that. And moving forward, you know, I see this other situation going that same way. Can we correct in a similar fashion?
I think I would like you to be my supervisor, Nick. Dr. Martha, let's go to you.
I think going back to last week's episode, I had mentioned that we're working with an outdated model, which is part of the problem. And as we sit here and offer ideas and new models and methodologies to incorporate, it's important to remember that humans come with baggage, for lack of a better word. And Lee used this phrase, sins of our predecessors, and that is so accurate because it applies both to the person who is being evaluated and to the person who is doing the evaluating. And if you come from an outdated model or a traumatic history when it comes to reviews, then it may not be so easy to all of a sudden embrace these new ways of doing things and have automatically have the trust that we are now in this together and we're going to hold hands, skip into the sunset, and sit around the campfire as we all get along swimmingly. Exactly, right? So the reality is that humans have experiences, and those experiences shape them going forward. And sometimes, even if you don't realize that on a conscious level, there may be some trauma there. And I know that it's more severe for some people than others, but because we have come from such an outdated model and from such a authoritarian style of management across industries, as we move forward and make changes, we have to remember that, because if we just plow forward without remembering that there's a potential trauma or something of that sort happening, then we can do even more damage. It's kind of like beating someone over the head, yelling at them, why aren't you happy? Can't you see I'm here to make you happy? And that won't always work. So we really have to look at this from a holistic approach, because as much as we have the research and we have new methodologies that we can implement in organizations, we have to do it in such a way that remembers where people may have come from and how they may have been affected in the past.
That's great advice and information. You know, I know as an actor, you know, if I'm going to play a role, I need to know the character's life story, because that affects everything about who they are. But I also want to ask you, because you mentioned that holistic fact, and if we look at leadership, it has rather a male energy. I mean, it's leaders started, you know, with the Industrial Revolution. Most of them were male. We seem to be coming more into almost a female sensibility, our female energy, where we are more compassionate, we are more supportive, we want to see things develop. Do you think we need to embrace more of that feminine energy with caring for our employees and their development being important?
We absolutely do, because even as women took on more leadership roles, they had to be the proverbial male. They had to act more like men. They were not really allowed to let in any of the feminine energy into their management or leadership styles. So there is a shift, definitely, but I think we have to be more proactive about it, because we are still in a world that, to a large degree, says it's worked for X number of years, leave it alone. And that's how you get stuck in old paradigms and old methodologies, which is why I always say that we need to look to the newer generations, to the incoming workforce, for their feedback and their ideas, because that's what it takes a lot of times to realize that just because you think it's been working for 100 years doesn't mean this is the best way to do it. And it doesn't mean that you're not causing damage and leaving a lot of bad things in your wake.
Thank you very much for that. Let's go back to our alpha male, Jeremy.
That's great. I like what Martha said about being proactive about it as well, and really looking at all faucets for that feedback in terms of how to keep being proactive in the right manner. I'm going to share an interesting research finding, an analogy. But first, we haven't had C3PO in the audience in a long time. Anonymous C3PO. We have anonymous C3PO here again. And I also want to, Gabby, if you could wave to everyone. So Gabby's starting, she's here in the audience today. We're starting IO student meetups now. Tom, I'm going off. I know we don't have a script, but I'm going off script. That's okay. We're going to have IO student meetups now starting March 20th. They're going to be every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. For IO students, whether you're in a bachelor's program, master's program, PhD program, and it's going to be great. They're going to be every 2 weeks, and those will be up. They're not up yet on the CBOC website, the events page, but they will be. We've already got three guests lined up, two of which are directors of IO programs to help with insights, tips, and tricks, and what they're doing, because a lot of people are looking for that practitioner-focused program. A lot of you know what I mean there. So they're going to give tips on that as well. And again, the whole reason, one of the main reasons for CBOC is to give folks out there what we didn't have in terms of that support and those insight and those tips and tricks. And Gabby's a perfect person to lead those. So thanks, Gabby. Thanks for being here. Now on to this research. So this is the article. It's titled Responses to Formal Performance Appraisal Feedback, the Role of Negative Affectivity. This is interesting. Well, I think it's interesting, Tom. You might not think it's interesting. How feedback recipients interpret ratings affects how they perceive the organization and their fit within it. Wow, that's pretty big. So that means that the messenger has to do a good job in helping the receiver properly interpret the feedback. And if they mess up, that person may be less committed to the organization, have less job satisfaction, and perceive less procedural and distributive justice. And that will deteriorate if the feedback combined with the ratings fall short of that individual's expectation. So no pressure for the managers, right? There was a meta-analysis conducted on the effects of feedback performance and concluded that although feedback generally improved performance, in more than one-third of the cases, feedback actually handicapped performance. So we can interpret this in one way, that one-third of the cases, feedback actually caused the individuals to reduce job satisfaction, have lower organizational commitment, and perceive less procedural and distributive justice. So that's pretty wild. So thinking about this, I think overall, I know Tom, you and I are big fans of this. So my first thought was, can we really coach managers on how to provide feedback? Because my one worry is, do we get stuck in, again, like what Dr. Martha was saying, not having that proactive way, getting those old things like, oh, do the feedback sandwich, where those kinds of things, which can be good, but that's, so I was thinking, how do we get managers to really tie in feedback to whatever the employee's perfect world is, what they really want to achieve, what they're passionate about? Because isn't that really the way? And also maybe even coaching the person receiving the feedback on how to receive the feedback. So I'll have two things to support that a little bit. We've talked a lot about mirror neurons. And the reason I say, let's get managers to really learn how to tie in feedback to the other person's perfect world. It's all about us, isn't it? It just really is. We're human. I'm not saying that in a bad way, but it just is all about us. Even look at our mirror neurons, which help us with empathy. But it also helps us with self-preservation. And I've used this example before. If you're in a room with somebody and they pick up a knife to cut a tomato, you're thinking and your mirror neurons are acting without you even knowing it. And in your mind, you're picking up the knife because you're wondering what that person's going to do with the knife. Are they going to cut a tomato? Are they going to come at you? Same thing with even if it's a coffee cup. We're just hardwired that way to make it all about us, even if somebody else is doing something. So isn't it important because of that to have the coach tie in feedback to the other person's perfect world? It doesn't have to be all the time. Of course, you want to align organization's goals, the person's goals, and department goals. But we really have to start thinking, I think, in terms of seeing through the other person's perspective, or at least seeing through their lens. Again, like what Dr. Martha was saying, because they have experiences. They have things that have affected them in different ways in the past. So it is really about that. And I'll leave with this analogy. And this is where, when we coach a person on receiving feedback, the research from this article also found that although employees express a strong desire for feedback, most people appreciate positive feedback, but tend to be dismissive of negative feedback. You know, big headline news, right? So how do we keep people from becoming dismissive of negative feedback? I thought about this. Maybe help them step outside the situation with an analogy. I have a race car analogy. Maybe it's not the best for everyone. But again, if that person's into sports, or if that person's into, you know, we loved underwater basket weaving. So find some good analogy. So think about it. If a race car driver gets negative feedback on the performance of the vehicle, they don't take it personally. They'll like, okay, let's do it. They test different parts. They collect data. They replace, fix, they'll upgrade different parts. Again, that race car driver, they're not going to take it personally, but that's feedback to help them succeed and to win races. But if the race car driver gets negative feedback on their performance, on the handling of the car, a move they made, they're probably going to take it personally. What are they going to do? They're immediately going to try to justify why they did it. Well, I was in the car. I noticed that. It's a totally different thing, but it's still to make the race, to help the race car driver win races. Even the race car driver has to step outside and look at negative feedback about their personal performance, the same as they would negative feedback of the performance of the actual car. The goal is the same, but we're human, and conversation should be around this. This type of analogy, I think, should be used, and two people should have, or groups of people should have, conversations about this. Get philosophical if you want, but the more conversations you have about something like this, about how we perceive feedback and how we take it, it helps it become less of that, you know, why are people afraid of snakes? Because we don't really understand how do they crawl like that? But it becomes like people become less afraid just having conversations about it. It gets it out, gets the people talking about it, and it sheds light on it. And like we've said before, barking dogs, Tom, are less scary during the daytime, because you can see if they're inside a fence when you're walking down that dark alley.
Yes, and there's a lot of dogs in the corporate world. thank you very much for that, Jeremy. Nikita, welcome to Work Cookie. Let's go to you.
Thank you so much. For me, I think continuous constructive feedback is essential for job satisfaction for employees. I once worked on a project with a colleague where we designed a job satisfaction survey for her team at her workplace, based on the job characteristics model, which is skill variety, task identity, task significance, autonomy, and feedback. So when we received the results from this survey, the individuals mostly mentioned that they would appreciate frequent feedback from their supervisors, because sometimes the employees are not sure if the tasks that they're performing, if they're on the right track or not. So they didn't know if they were meeting like work expectations. And yeah, I believe that continuous feedback while working on a project will be beneficial for employees to improve their satisfaction at work.
Yeah, you know, I would just love to get away from the yearly review and just have feedback as an ongoing process. That really does seem to be the most effective. So thank you very much for that, Nikita. Natasha, lovely to see you again. Let's go to you.
Hi, everyone. So there's so many gems that were dropped earlier and so many points I want to jump on. But I think I want to go first with the question, one of the questions that you asked, Jeremy, about what, how do we go about training or coaching employees to receive feedback, or training them. And I personally think that it's not more so about coaching individuals to receive the feedback more so than it is coaching managers in providing feedback, knowing how to provide feedback, and also being mindful of who we are hiring as managers of people. Just because someone is good at the work that they are doing does not necessarily make them great at the task or the art of managing humans and humans' performances. And so I think that it starts there. Also, I want to go back to, I believe, let me see. It was you, Lee, who probably mentioned about, you know, annual reviews just going away. I think that having it on an annual basis, as you mentioned, Tom, is not useful, right? For the simple fact that in my own consulting practice, I can't begin to tell you how many times I am working with individuals who are just finding out about year-long issues at the time of the annual performance and when they're being placed on a PIP, or even reading, you know, these reviews and seeing comments that are made by managers that either A, are not compliant under Title VII, where they are literally making discriminatory comments, generally that fall under the brackets of place of origin, gender, sex, to list a few. But oftentimes, these are items that should not even be written or should not appear on an annual review if you were proactive in providing that feedback throughout the year. And I would say that I would not necessarily say that, I think that what we need to encourage are work environments that, a culture of feedback, period. Because, and one of the things that I have done when I manage staff, we have service agreements, work agreements. Our first meeting is, hi, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Are you a morning person? Are you an evening person? And added to that is, how do you receive feedback? How do you prefer to receive feedback? Good or bad? Just to cut, not necessarily bad, but good. And the areas, like if there are areas that you need to improve on, how would you like to receive that information? How can I provide you that information in a way that resonates with you, and to Dr. Martha's point, that does not traumatize you? And speaking to the topic of trauma, one thing that I do in my HR practice, or in general when working, either reporting into or when I am dealing with employees, is first of all asking them, before we meet today, tell me a little bit about your experience with HR. Tell me a little bit about your experience with performance reviews. This way I have a general sense of, I've always had great performance reviews. Okay, what was great about it? You know what? Not necessarily at my former job, my manager did not provide great feedback. Well, what about the feedback that was not great? Because then it gives you again that backstory in terms of who this person is as an individual, and how they fit into the fabric of our organization. But most importantly, how can I tailor my feedback to this individual in a way that they will receive it, that will be productive, and that I can again measure whatever the improvement is, or even be able to, you know, award, let's say, good performance, what have you. And lastly, I think the last thing that I would like to leave to that note in terms of, like, I think someone mentioned it earlier in terms of saying that managers should be held responsible for, you know, the performance of, and I too often see managers that would just say, you have 30 days to fix all these issues, but don't necessarily say, and this is how I can support you, or how can I support you in this journey? Because ultimately, it is a collaboration. As a manager, you are, it's kind of like the captain of the ship. You are responsible as well for this person's success. And I think that embracing a spirit, a culture of feedback, being able to get that backstory from the RIC report, also being able to say, and how can I partner with you? All this leads the employee to understand that this is a safe environment where at any given time, just as I'm receiving feedback from you, I can also say, hey, Linda Ann, what you just mentioned, the feedback that you provided me 2 weeks ago, I didn't receive it as you probably intended it. And here's what I was hearing. And it came off as a critique versus something that I needed to improve on. And so when employees feel that, you know, there is that safe, dynamic engagement where it's a culture of feedback versus it's something that we do at the end of the year or mid-year just to kind of like have an idea of who we're going to retain and who's going to leave. I think that it will slowly but surely replace the need to have annual reviews, because as these performances are happening, we have a better sense of who we can promote in the immediate, who can take on more work, or who actually needs more support to be able to meet expectations.
I'd love to ask you, Natasha, because I love when you said, you know, managers are managing people. And we've often talked about how managers need to upscale their training, that we're moving into a new world. But I find that most managers, they don't look at it that way. They look at it as moving pieces on a chessboard. Is that what you're finding out there when you're working with your clients? And is that the transition they need to make?
So I think that oftentimes these managers are a product of the managers that they had before them. It has always been this way.
Yeah.
I do not know any better because no one has treated me any better. But ultimately, as someone mentioned earlier, oftentimes the annual performance review is just a checkbox. Or in other instances, it might be a measure of documentation just to support our desire to terminate this employee once we get back from the holidays, even though we have zero documentation to prove that consistent to our employee handbook, that we have had verbal and written conversations with this person, and that annual review is pretty much what is utilized. But I think that another part about it is, and I see this mostly with larger nonprofits that I have supported, is that oftentimes managers have so many direct reports that they either don't get around providing that feedback, or they're not able to, or they don't necessarily know their direct reports. And other times it might just be that they don't have the time. So it's kind of like, you're doing great, just keep doing what you're doing, which is not helpful. And most recently this year, I had one organization where in I was looking at the ratings that they provided someone who was a top performer, operations person that was a top performer. And I said, well, if the highest rate is 5 and this person excels at everything in this domain and there was nothing negative, why is this person receiving a 3.5? And their response to me was, well, because we don't want an EA, we don't ever give people 5s because we don't want EAs to automatically believe that they can become CEO of the organization. And so I was just like, okay, had to kind of go back and let them know no one would think that. This is the purpose of, and in so doing, what you're in essence communicating back to this employee is that you do not appreciate, value, or see their efforts. And so I think that, again, it's really about understanding what the goal of these performances are in alignment with, you know, who we are as a culture, what our culture is, and really, how do we want our employees' perception to be about just like the article just mentioned, about their fit within the organization. Do they feel that they belong because they are receiving the support that they need to be successful in their role, to meet and exceed, you know, objectives, goals, what have you?
Thank you very much for that. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
A couple of points to make is, I think that what I'm hearing from a lot of people, it seems like some people see the performance review process almost as a punitive process. And instead, if you have the mindset of this is the tool we use to create success, much to Jeremy's analogy of the race car, you know, think about that. The driver, the mechanic, and everybody who changes a tire on the race car on the track, when the racer wins, right? When that car wins, goes across first, the whole team celebrates that success, right? So if you think about it in that manner, is that it's this mutual process to get the car across the finish line to achieve the organization's purpose or strategic goals. It's a mutual process, and it's, I lost my train of thought there for a second. Anyway, one of the key things that Natasha had mentioned was something I think is really important to do is to always open with a question. And that is a way for you to understand the landscape of how they perceive the situation, the process, and help you navigate their way of perceiving things best for them. So it really opens the door for you to avoid really putting your foot in your mouth kind of situation. And then as you're working with your team members throughout the year, and you see something that you would prefer that they do differently, if you say to them, you know, I understand how you got to this point and why you did this, X, Y, and Z. Going forward, if you could do Y instead and give them the reason for that, this is how it will benefit everyone, then it's almost like an assertiveness script kind of process. Then you can, it's almost not even a criticism. It's just like a suggestion for how we move forward better. And so I think if we understand that people want to succeed by nature, just humans want to be successful. And so focusing on how do I make you successful? Because each reviewer needs to understand that their success depends on the success of the people that they're supervising. So your job is to make them successful.
Thank you for that. Nick, let's go to you.
Yeah, everybody in the chat here seems to be kind of on the same page of it can be better. It has to be better. And part of that goes back to the age old IO, it depends. You know, you're not going to manage every employee the same way. You know, so when you ask a manager to know the capabilities of their team, you know, to your point, Tom, about kind of that more compassionate energy of taking an interest in and developing employees. Yeah, I think a manager should know at least the bare bones of kind of who that person is, with as much as that person is willing to share who they are outside of the office, because the only caution is don't ask a question that's going to get yourself in trouble. You know, it's not an interview. It's a little, you know, longer term relationship, but there's still some things that you have to respect that maybe somebody wants to keep private. Maybe they don't want to bring that part of themselves to work. So again, it takes a very, you know, tailored approach. What are the goals of the organization? What is the culture of the organization? And, you know, how do you really tailor that to the specific situation? And also remember that there's got to be a balance. You know, we're all in roles that typically focus on, you know, performance evaluation and constantly being awash in how can we help people be better. At some point, the work's got to get done. If you're stuck in performance evaluation meetings all day, every day, when are you going to get the books balanced? And so I think there is that tension there. And that's where, you know, either you have an IO on staff who can devote their entire intention to that and train those managers to give feedback, or you're going to keep, you know, sticking a baseball bat in your tire spokes. You're going to keep tripping over yourself trying to get it done. And I think that's where, you know, again, we come in and are able to offer our expertise and hopefully make it a simpler process by, you know, I'm going to take this mental strain off of your plate and you can focus on the business. And the compounding effects of that are, you know, you get past dollars and cents really, really quickly when you've improved the morale and the tenor of the organization.
And so if you are a corporate executive listening to the Work Cookie podcast, go out, get yourself an IO. You need one today. Thank you very much for that, Nick. Gabby, welcome to Work Cookie. Let's go to you.
Hey there. I love what I'm hearing because I feel like you can bring all of this information and feedback together and really create something with that, right? So I keep thinking, like, what does that look like when you're having a conversation with a leader? I know when we're talking about leaders, there's always this like idea or concept that a leader, because they're now a leader, if they stepped up and they're doing now this job, they should automatically fill in all the boxes, right? They should know how to communicate. They should know how to deliver all of these things. They should know how to do their job. They should know how to manage people. And in reality, when people do and step up, not a lot of people actually have those skills. And that's something that's been mentioned already. And I think some of the conversations that I've had with leaders and business owners, it's almost like the first thing that I say is, I reserve the right to be wrong. Like I don't know everything. I don't know that I have all the answers, but let's figure it out together. And it's almost like taking that leader weight and saying, hey, you're human. The next question usually is like, do you go to therapy? Do you have someone you go and talk to and feel comfortable, even if they tell you the ugly truth? And then if they do, it's almost like, let's model that. What do they do that you like? What do they say that you feel comfortable? And I find that by identifying their safe people and saying, you can also do that as well. You can pick up on some of the skills and mimic that when you're having these difficult conversations, because they are hard and they do require a lot of practice and they require a lot of exposure to having these difficult conversations, because nobody likes to feel uncomfortable. Nobody likes to be told what they're doing wrong. But if we teach leaders or we teach just people to say, hey, I don't know, you may not know, let's figure it out together, sometimes that can help the conversation feel a little bit safer. That's just purely my opinion and what I've done, that I know that it works. But I think taking everything that everybody has said here and then making it your own, what do you feel comfortable with saying? And how do you feel comfortable saying it to somebody else? Would you like somebody to say it to you in that way? And I think the last thing I want to say is, to be a leader, I think sometimes we forget that it takes a lot of inner work, a lot of insight, a lot of accountability, a lot of honesty with yourself. And if there are leaders out there who are choosing to want to be better and do better, I think that's the very first thing that we got to be open about. Hey, this is going to suck because you might learn some things about yourself that you may not like, but that's okay because we're humans and we all have ugly things and we all have flaws and we can make it better. That doesn't make you a bad leader. It just makes you someone who's ready for growth. So that's my 2 cents for today.
Well, thank you very much for that. And if I could just jump onto that, you know, leaders, just because you can talk doesn't mean you're a great communicator. You might want to improve those skills a little bit as well. Lee, let's go to you.
Yeah, so I'll make this quick because I know we're almost out of time. So if you're in an organization that is still under the old paradigm, that you're doing the once a year performance review, step out of the box, man. You know, use that performance review as just the end of the year wrap up. So, you can talk about the compensation changes that are coming up, which is normally what it's tied to. You can say, hey, look, let's talk about your goals for next year. Let's look forward. This is not an end of year. This is a pre-beginning year. What are we going to do next year? What are our goals? What can we do to help you? What kind of training or whatever can we potentially get you into in the coming year? You know, use it as a positive stepping off point to start off the new year. And then, you know, take it upon yourself to make feedback a regular thing throughout the year. You know, and whatever cadence, you know, works for you and your team. Is it monthly? Is it quarterly? You know, whatever that case may be. You know, maybe it's, you know, biweekly for one person, and for somebody else, it needs to be quarterly. It just depends on what's going on, and base that on the people. And as far as the feedback goes, you know, speak with someone. Don't talk at them. So when you give the feedback, you know, well, obviously watch the response. I mean, there's, you know, the body language is a large part of communication. And then ask them questions. You know, what was going on here? You know, maybe things aren't what I think they are. You know, so talk me through this. What happened? What could we do possibly differently? You know, what happens if you push the red button instead of the blue button? You know, and talk through it and help them to feel heard. And then even if it's not necessarily positive feedback, they're going to have, a more positive reaction to it. And I'm just going to throw out, I'm going to put the HR hat on here for a second. I would be very careful with, asking people if they're in therapy or something like that, because there's some lines there you may not want to touch.
Not with me. I'll talk all about my therapy. Thank you very much for that, Lee. I-303 CPO, let's go to you.
Yeah, I-303 here. So for me, I think fundamentally what we're skipping over as a group is what's the purpose of feedback in the first place? What is the reasoning behind it? And so is it to optimize performance of employees? Is it to be a punitive tool? Is it a political mechanism that we can use to try to advance or ourselves in the organization? I think fundamentally we need to establish what that is. I'm going to assume it's to improve or optimize performance. And so one of the best coaches in professional sports today is Greg Popovich. For those of you that don't know, he's the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. He has one of the highest win percentages across all professional sports teams. And he uses one phrase. And this one phrase, in and of itself, without providing any other guidance, improves team performance and individual employee performance. This is what he says. He says, "This team has high standards. I'm giving you this feedback because I have high standards of you, and I believe you can reach these high standards." That's it. That quote, in and of itself, improves performance of individual players. For managers that use that within the organization, without providing any other guidance, improves performance. Just that phrase. So we need to optimize for performance, make sure we cultivate a culture where the feedback is clear to everybody, but we also need to recognize individuals are different in their career trajectory. So for novices or individuals early in their career, ideally we want to provide what's called future-facing feedback, meaning this is how you perform now, this is how you can improve moving forward. On the flip side, for experts, and we typically see this with professional sports teams, they prefer backwards-facing feedback, meaning this game occurred, this race just occurred, this event just occurred, this is how you could improve based on the performance that you just did. I know Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods were really big on backward-facing feedback, meaning this game just happened, what can I do better? Whereas novices, we do more future-facing.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I was also going to say, so when it comes to feedback, whether being good or bad, I think we need to let go of that paradigm. Here's what I mean by that. Rather than it being good or bad, it's observable versus non-observable. Or actionable versus non-actionable. So rather than saying someone is bad, it's we had this expectation, but you performed here. That just identifying that gap, not phrasing it positively or negatively. I think that'll be easier for individuals to swallow or to incorporate that feedback into what they're performing moving forward. So my last point that I want to make before moving on is what happens when we give reverse feedback or employees to supervisors? Where in history has that worked in the past? For me, one of the clearest examples is when Winston Churchill created the Office of Statistical Analysis. And so there, essentially, it was his mechanism to be able to encourage more frontline soldiers to provide feedback to generals and eventually to Winston Churchill. He recognized having a top-down leadership perspective was not going to win him the war. And so the way this helped the UK defend their island against the Germans, who had a better performing airplane, essentially, all he did was provide his air pilots on the front line. This is our goal, to defend this channel. Everything else, you decide, and then give me the feedback. So England was able to move much more efficiently, and that's how they were able to defend against the Germans, even though the Germans had a better performing airplane. So in a nutshell, if we're able to do all of that, I think we can use feedback much more effectively.
Thank you very much for that. Great points. Thank you. Natasha, let's go to you.
Yes. So I think that I would agree with one of the points that were just made about, you know, and I think I mentioned it earlier, I think that organizations should really take a step back and ask themselves before we determine what type of, you know, performance reviews we're going to have. What exactly, what is the data that we're trying to, you know, collect? Like, what is the purpose of performance reviews? What does that mean for the purposes of our organization or building or culture, et cetera, and work from there? And then really determine, another thing is determine whether or not the language, because generally these performance reviews tend to be a one size fit all, one performance review throughout the organization. Does the same language and category apply by division, by role, by seniority? Does it apply? Because it might look different for different people. And then lastly, or should I say lastly, and then the next thing about it is really goals next year. Yeah, is really coaching managers through the performance reviews. At one of my previous organizations, what I did was I had the organization start having performance review meetings with managers in terms of going through what the performance review looks like, what they can and cannot say to employees, how to support employees, having these type of roundtables where managers can also ask questions about anything that they might be confused about. And then lastly, I believe that having managers know that they should let employees know that, hey, this review is a two-way street. You do not have to sign this document to acknowledge receipt immediately. Take the time to take a day or two to review, to think about what we discuss. Come back with questions if you have any. Come back with any explanations or clarity or rebuttals that you might have, so that we can work this. Because ultimately, what we have to take into account is that a performance review is an official documentation. Whatever it is that is written on that piece of paper can be used at any given time to make a determination on this employee, because it resides on their file. And I am always surprised at how many employees who do not know that they don't have to accept the performance review and sign it. You have the right to say this information is incorrect. This information is biased. Here is the full context. Do so verbally and in writing. And to understand that, as with anything else, it is negotiable. It is a dynamic document that you can discuss and come to different terms or different agreements as to what happens from here on out. And so I think that organizations truly need to be more mindful about what the purpose of this document is and really give more thought to it. And then kind of understand, not based on best practice, but what works for the fabric of who we are, who we say we are, and how we want employees to experience us and tell the story of us. How do we proceed about these going forward?
Thank you very much for that. Well, Jeremy, we there was a lot to say on this topic today, you know, including the fact of, why are we even doing these reviews? Are we doing them? You know, should we discontinue them? Do we need to just really revamp them and rethink them? So I'm awfully glad we're going to be talking about this again next week.
Yeah, it's a good thing we have four episodes on this topic. I'm glad. So one thing I was thinking real quick when Gabby and Lee were speaking the last time they spoke, who wouldn't want them as your boss? Like, that's a conversation I would definitely look to. They modeled really well in real time what people can actually say. And I was just, that's the kind of thing. And that's how you know when things are good, right? How you feel going into a meeting and how you feel when you leave, you know, and when you look forward to a meeting or not and talking to someone. The next thing, C3PO, I put my email direct message here in the chat. If you want, we're putting C3PO in the like who's speaking, like when we tag people in a podcast, we're putting that in there. But C3PO, if you want your real name in there, just send me an email and we'll get you tagged on the podcast description and on LinkedIn when we put it out too. But I love the historical examples. I was thinking mic drop when C3PO was speaking today. So thanks for coming in and sharing. Let me click this link here before I lose it. And we got lots of events going on this month. We have an in-person event in Denver, Salt Lake City. We've got a bunch of virtual events. And we've got Lee's event tonight at 6:30. And that's all up on the cboc.com/events. What a day. This is fantastic. Tom?
It's been, once again, another great episode. And thank you to everyone who contributed today. Great to get some new voices out there as well. And if you're listening to the Work Cookie podcast, if you have the opportunity to join us live, 12 noon Eastern time here on Thursdays. And with that, Jeremy, I think it's time to count out.
Thanks, everyone. Counting out. Big smile today on my face and everyone else I see. Counting out in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At CBOC.com.